Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Rod Oram today. Morning, Rod. How are you?
Rain and Rachel, very well, thank you.
Hey, we've got a lot of big topics to talk about today. We're going to be talking a lot about climate change and also a bit about Ihu Mātou. Let's start with probably maybe the closest to home if you're heading back to school at the moment. It is the Climate Change Schools Resources that the government's put out. What are your thoughts on this and what exactly is it, Rod?
It's a set of teaching materials for a wide range of students. Up to about 14 years old, and I think it should actually go beyond that. I think it's a curriculum that should extend all the way through school. But anyway, it's a set of resources that have been trialled at a school in Christchurch and now being rolled out nationally. And I think it's very welcome and very important because climate change in all its manifestations is here. It is very big. Mm-hmm. But the wonderful thing about it is, is that because you could importantly bring pretty much any subject in the curriculum to reflect and help people through climate issues. So I think it's a great thing to add to schools' curriculum. And now it'll be up to the schools to address it with real creativity and integrity, which would, I'm sure, help young people feel empowered, feel they can do things, feel that their life is not being hugely compromised by forces out of their control.
This seems to have been getting quite a bit of support from across different parties. Tracy Martin from New Zealand First has just come out yesterday saying she thinks it's a great idea. But we've also seen the National Party saying that they would possibly look to take it out of the curriculum again if they got back in. What do you think that is saying about their position on this?
It says a lot about their position on the climate crisis, because if you remember back late last year when the zero carbon bill was going through Parliament, they voted for it, but they said that they would immediately seek to amend it in seven substantial ways when they next are in power. And the problem with that statement was twofold. First of all, the whole point of that legislation was to give certainty to the framework, and they immediately undercut it. So they didn't fundamentally understand what the purpose of that bill was. And that was particularly disturbing to business, which had lobbied long and hard for the in support of this climate legislation, so they know how to plan, how to progress. So this is another example where they're trying to play things two ways. They're trying to show that they have some interest in the climate, but they're also trying to rack up their supporters who are climate skeptics. So I think they're all over the show on this, and it's going to be quite fascinating as we get into the election campaign proper later on in the year to see if they can bring any clarity of to their message on climate. And it's very noticeable in the last couple of days in terms of the climate deniers and skeptics out there have taken this curriculum as a new bit of fuel for their argument. So, for example, there's a piece by Carl Dufresne in the Dominion Post today, which likens it to the government bringing in this new ideology hand in hand with biffing the Bible from schools, and sees that, you know, it's about ideological control. It's not really about education.
So it's going to be quite a fascinating debate as we do get closer to election time. Let's talk a little bit more about, I guess, bigger picture climate change stuff, looking at the rest of the world a little bit. So the UN has now ruled that climate refugees cannot be sent home, which kind of links to a topic that you wanted to talk about, Rod, which is Davos. Now, that sounds a bit like a Doctor Who monster, but what actually is Davos?
This is now its 50th year of the absolute elite of business getting together with politicians and the like in this Swiss ski resort. The brainchild of Klaus Schwab, who is still at the age of 81, is very much the driver of the World Economic Forum, which lies behind it. So this year, their theme is stakeholders for a cohesive and sustainable world. So it sounds wonderfully cuddly and good to have. And it seems hard to imagine that people arriving in some 1,500 private jets, which was the tally last year, would necessarily focus their minds on these issues. But in fact, the biggest rift, if you like, in Davos this year has been between Trump, who was there for 2 days, he only left a few hours ago, trying to persuade these world business leaders that Trump, was doing all the right things on business. But his comments on climate were really quite extreme, no surprise. And that set up a real rift because, by and large, there is a very significant shift around the world by business to seeking to play a constructive role on addressing the climate crisis. And that was very significant rift in the comments from all kinds of major companies. So, for example, Microsoft announced it plans to be carbon neutral by 2030. You're getting this very significant shift, and it's going on in the States too. So there is this huge tension in the States between the Trump administration and those in business who believe that business has a real role and responsibility, but also, and I don't mean this cynically, an opportunity to bring in new technologies significantly change our economies, and so we start to do something about the climate crisis.
Well, let's talk a little bit about something much closer to home again, not a Swiss, you know, ski chalet, although, of course, everything that they're discussing affects the whole world in its entirety, so it is a really fascinating and crucial time of the year as well. But Ihu Mata, which we, of course, have been following very closely here up at BFM and across the country too, we've seen in the last couple of days a bit of changes happening on the whenua. The Kingitanga flag has been taken down and some of the fences, the Fletcher's construction fences have been moved and they reopened the road to the whenua as well. And we've seen that a resolution is expected for before Waitangi Day. Do you have any predictions about what that resolution could look like, or do you have any thoughts about it at this stage?
I have thoughts, but no predictions. My thoughts are that this has been a very important issue. This is a very special part of Tamaki Makaurau in terms of one of the earliest places of settlement. I often cycle out that way, and I was sitting in a paddock near the stone fields on Saturday, taking a bit of a break from cycling, and just reflecting on what a beautiful place it is. And it needs to be treated with respect and become, you know, more obviously part of our important heritage. But the muddle of rules that have got us here, whether on one hand it's the Treaty of Waitangi process, which is good at dealing with iwi and hapu issues, but where there are conflicts within a community, as there have been there, it's come down to, and rightly so, it's come down to the Kingitanga movement and and other Māori processes for resolving those in order to get a clear sense of what's the best way forward for them. I think that's been a very good part of this process. On the other hand, I think it was pretty crazy that anybody wanted to put houses there anyway, because the second airport runway is partially built. It'll be built more slowly over coming years, but it is coming. It comes very close to that area. And also, there's been huge industrial development down through there, right up to the limits of Himatau. And the idea of putting housing there, far removed from public transport and shopping areas and school and all this, never made sense at all. And so that's been a failure of Auckland Council systems. So it's been a very long, drawn-out process. I have no idea how this is going to be resolved. The government's making it very clear it's not going to write a check. It's not going to upset the Treaty of Waitangi processes in that kind of way. So I'm fascinated to see what the outcome is. And it's yet another example of Fletcher being they've been designing some bad projects, whether it's at Three Kings in Auckland and elsewhere. I just don't think they have the right sense of plugging into what the importance of a piece of land is. All they see is an opportunity to throw up some houses.
Well, thank you.
And the houses are really important.
They are, yes.
Making sure we build the right houses in the right places.
It makes a big big difference as well. Well, I'm also certainly really crossing my fingers for a positive resolution for the mana whenua as well. Thank you so much for speaking to us this morning, Rod. It's always a pleasure. We'll speak to you again in a couple of weeks.
Very briefly, the UN ruling on climate refugees was a really important one because it clarifies the rules hugely, and it doesn't affect the cases here in the New Zealand court because it's taking a longer term view, but it's really, really important for the UN to be crystal clear about the right roles of government, to take more interventions and to offer more help to places like Kiribati, which are very threatened, and to try to help people there, because ultimately the UN is saying that those people will have the right to move if things aren't sorted out, and you governments won't be able to send them back.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Rod. We'll speak to you again in a couple of weeks' time.
Thanks, Rachel. See you.
See you.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
You certainly